Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast, and today I have a fabulous guest for episode 11, a man who needs no introduction, but I feel the need to introduce him because, sir, you have one of the finest names ever, and I have to introduce you this way. It's DJ Waldo!
Come on down.
I just feel like you have such an awesome name. You know, originally on Twitter, back in the early days, I actually thought you were a DJ.
You are not the first person to say that.
I imagine that's true.
I sort of tell people it's a blessing and a curse to have that name. So the DJ part of the name, obviously I always get confused with a disc jockey or my wife teases me, DJ Tanner from Full House. I get once in a while. And then the Waldo side is, you know, of course, the classic Where's Waldo books that came out right around when I was in the most, you know, fragile time of my life, eighth grade.
Of course, nobody made fun of that.
Right. And then, well, on top of that, I don't know if you remember this, but the Van Halen video, Hot for Teacher, there's a music video in the scene in there. The kid's name that they tease is, his last name is Waldo, and he's on the bus, and they say, sit down, Waldo.
Awesome.
It's also in eighth grade for that. So, but the good news is I own every online property for DJ, WALDOW, and nobody ever will likely take that from me.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, I have a pretty good name too because I don't compete with too many other Gibbards out there except for Ben Gibbard of Death Cab for Cutie. I pretty much own the Gibbard space, but I was going to think that DJ Waldo would be even more like...
I mean, the Waldo space is pretty owned, but the I probably... own as well, but the DJ Waldo. I mean, if you Google DJ Waldo, you're going to find, I mean, there's not anybody else. So, blessing and a curse.
That's kind of awesome. I mean, you I know we're going to talk a little bit about what you're doing with Marketo now and how, you know, I read a little bit about how that came about and it wasn't like you were actively seeking it, but given that you have so much out there on the web, I'd imagine if you were actively seeking a job, you could walk into the interview and be like, just Google me, drop the mic and walk out of the room because there's no chance they'd find someone else.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I mean, that's also sort of a good thing and a bad thing, right? I mean, it's the good part of it is my resume, if you will, both my personal and professional resume lives online. I mean, it is there for all to see. Works out well for me because I have a pretty open personality. I don't have anything to hide. I don't, you know, do drugs. I don't do anything really stupid. I, you know, drink on occasion, but I don't know, I'm trying to do anything too dumb. You know, sort of like it is funny. When I was between jobs at one point, I was having – actually, I'm a big Michigan – I went to school at Michigan. Big – you know, I've got a – I know your audio listeners can't hear, but I've got a Michigan tattoo. I mean, I'm pretty dialed into Michigan athletics and, you know, very, very big fan. And I remember there was an opening for what I thought was going to be the dream job. It was the social media person at University of Michigan. It was like – everything I could have asked for. And I remember going through the online process and I had to submit a resume, like a PDF, Word doc, whatever, old school resume. And I was like, I mean, it's all there. Like, what do you need? And this is a social media job. Like, what do you need to see on my resume? It's all like I put my LinkedIn and I had all this issue of like trying to actually put a physical copy, upload a physical copy. And I couldn't continue the application without a physical copy. It was crazy. So there's that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of that old school meets new school. Like really they should have had all of that information. The paper resume should be on the back end. When I start looking to hire people and, you know, for the jobs that I've had to have people come in for and subcontract to, the application process for my company is extremely different. And usually the resume is at the very, very end. And it's like, if you feel like it, you know, upload a resume, but I want to know.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's more of the trend, but yeah. You know, I still see it at Marketo. I mean, we still have people have a resume. We look at LinkedIn, certainly, but, you know, people have their resume. So yeah.
I'll tell you what I'd like to see. And, you know, this isn't – you may not be able to fully identify with this because you're married, you have kids. But I'm on OkCupid as a single dude. And one of the things I really appreciate about that from a, you know, just a network perspective, an application perspective, is that the way that they match people together is through this question and answer format, where basically the percentage of questions that you have similar that are important to you with somebody else, they match you. And I was thinking to myself immediately, oh my God, LinkedIn should absolutely do this. If you think about corporate culture and then what the people are looking for in a job, you know, what you could rate on any different number of, you know, categories of a company, you know, technology, culture, autonomy, all the different things. So I thought that would be a really cool way of doing it. And we need that one platform that just gets rid of this resume nonsense.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. I totally agree. Especially, well, I mean, the whole irony for me was it was a social media job and they didn't really ask about what my social profiles looked like or what my online presence was like. But I agree. I mean, I think that the only challenge that you mentioned to me is that, you know, there's times where you don't want to be exactly the same. You know, I would say in a professional setting and sometimes in a personal setting too. I mean, now the difference is the things that matter more, right? So I can think in a personal setting, do you want to have kids? Yes or no? That's something core. But, you know, do you like watching sports on the weekend or you like cooking? I mean, it doesn't have to be – that doesn't have to be completely lined up, and sometimes it's better if it's not.
Yeah.
Says the experienced married for 7 years guy with two kids.
Oh, of course.
Like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I was going to – you know, that's what I was saying. I think you're a little bit removed from it, but it's all good.
Right.
Well, listen, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about what you're doing over at Marketo. I'd love to talk a little bit about, you know, some of your background, some of your history. You know, for those listening that don't know, you know, both DJ and I have been doing this for a decent amount of time. I think, DJ, you've been doing it longer than I have, you know, just being part of the online marketing world. But we were put together and connected through a guy that used to work with me, John Steyert, and he just spoke so highly of you. And after all the kind things he said about you and everything, I looked into you and I was like, all right, yeah, definitely this guy should be on the show. So one of the first things that I'm interested about is I looked at your profile, and specifically when I looked at LinkedIn and I saw your background, and it's a, you know, it's a really interesting, diverse background from, you know, teaching eighth grade American history all the way through, you know, now you're at Marketo as the digital marketing evangelist. Is that correct? Digital marketing evangelist? Did I say that right?
Digital marketing evangelist.
All right, sweet.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's been a really interesting career trajectory, and you even had your own company for a while. And what I'm amazed at is that when I looked at the things people said about you, you and I are very similar. The big core difference, though, is that it looks like you do really well working inside of a company, that you're able to manage the politics of it and manage teams and manage having, you know, people that you report to, et cetera. How do you go about being, you know, this outgoing, positive, hardworking person that also has an entrepreneurial side and can also make waves inside of a company?
Can I get back to you on that?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, no, I'm just kidding.
If you don't know the answer, that's fine. I'm curious.
It's funny that you mentioned that. You know, I've been at Marketo now for five months. You know, this is, you know, by mid February, end of February. It's 5 months now, and I actually, it's funny that you say that, because I think that has been a challenge for me of getting back into the workforce in this way of having to answer somebody. So it's the first time, and it's good and bad, right? You know, so it's like, with blog posts that I write, I just wrote something this morning, and normally I would hit publish and it would be live right now. Mm-hmm. Now it goes through a process. It's not a bad process. I mean, two people review it that sit right next to me. I know them well. I just had lunch with one of them, and it's not a bad process. And lots of times, you know, Maggie especially will review stuff, and it'll take my writing from like a B to an A. And it's great. You know, she'll find typos. She'll find things that just the one thing. But it's funny you mention that, because it has been a little bit of a challenge for me, I think, navigating that and having people actually, you know, having to rely on other people. That's been a challenge. But at the same time, I mean, I'm sort of learning as I'm getting back into this that, you know, I try as best I can to operate independently. I've always been the sort of person that says, easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. I just kind of do things. I think I, you know, play dumb, if you will, in some ways, and just roll with things. And, you know, I'm fairly confident that, you know, when I'm creating content, I have done, I think, there's a lot of interesting things and have been effective. And so I'm confident that I can do it. Sometimes it gets roadblocked, or sometimes, you know, but Marketo is pretty open to it. The thing that is challenging sometimes is the process of going through the proper channels and knowing who to ask. And, you know, the difference is when you're working for yourself, the only people that have an opinion are people on the social web. When you're working at a company, the people that have an opinion are all those people around you. You know, so I write a blog post now and I get emails from sometimes the CEO, sometimes people on the sales team. Some of them are positive, some of them are negative, you know, but there's the people that I work with, and it's a little bit different situation there.
Yeah, the accountability is extended far beyond, do I feel like hitting publish and can I live with the results of this?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. It's fascinating that you're able to jump in and out of entrepreneurship, you know, in the more traditional sense. You know, it's very much, I had a guy on my podcast who I talked to about intrapreneurship, and it sounds like that's something that you're kind of running with as well, that you're, you know, looking for the way to make it work where you can still be outgoing and a risk taker and try things, but at the same time, you know, assimilate it to enough a degree that you can get traction.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I started a podcast at Marketo. You know, I'm 16 episodes in, and that hadn't really been done at Marketo before, and I just sort of did it. You know, I've leveraged, I'm sure similar to like you do, leveraged my own community and to find guests that I think would be interesting for the marketing, what we call our marketing nation. But yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of the intrapreneur stuff that you can just sort of do. Or we do, you know, I'm doing a webinar next week, and actually it's in a couple days, and it's a webinar about testing, and we decided to do a Google moderator form and let people vote what questions they wanted to hear. So instead of us telling what questions, people vote and then comment up and down, and we're going to pick the five questions of people, and we're going to answer those questions. You know, that's – I have the ability to do some of those unique things and, you know, not go with how we've always done. We're doing instead of – we typically do, you know, the standard hour-long webinar, 45 minutes plus questions, and I've been trying to do these 29-minute webinars. You know, get a quick – you know, you're eating lunch and you don't have a ton of time. Let's just do a quick half-hour webinar.
Yeah.
And so just testing different things and seeing if they work.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Marketo, and I use the Marketo resources section as the example whenever I'm talking to a client about potentially putting together a resource center or some sort of like a thought leadership platform. I immediately turn to Marketo's and I say, look at what they're doing. Like, tell me why you like it and be really clear, because it's pretty obvious that you should. It's very visual. There's a lot of great content. The headlines are superb. You know, even just looking at the blog that you've been putting together for Marketo, I mean, it's obvious that you've got a real mastery of the headlines.
Yeah, well, I have to that all goes – there's really three people that manage that. I mean, it's Dana Rothman, who sits two over from me, Maggie Jones, who works on her team as well, and then John Miller, one of the co-founders of Marketo, is sort of the final editor-in-chief that gives blessing on all blog posts. And, you know, he's always been a big believer in – the blog and in general, just content. The three of them manage the content also. I mean, it's really in between Dana and Maggie, they manage almost all, but I'm just sort of a contributing person. And some stuff is outsourced when it comes to the visual stuff. But most of the writing is original content. And yeah, I mean, I was amazed before I got here that it's really run by just a handful of people. And I'm amazed even more now that I see it in action. You know, the amount of content that we're able to rip through these definitive guides and everything, it really is incredible. And it's good stuff. You know,
it's not
just fluff stuff. It's good stuff. So now I've just given Dana a reason, and Dana, Maggie, and John a reason to listen to this episode. So kudos to them.
Right on. Well, I'll give them a shout out too. So now they've got two reasons.
For sure.
So quick question. You were mentioning a blog post you're working on, and I saw you had put out a tweet that you're working on a post about a roller skate wearing unicorn standing on its hind legs, donning rainbow spandex, balancing a stack of plates.
How's that for headline? I'm actually trying to get that to be the headline.
That
for
would
this
be
blog
just
post.
Unreal. Like, that's something even BuzzFeed would explode if it had a headline like that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. We've been toying with a little bit more of the Upworthy / BuzzFeed headlines. And it's funny. There's two – I feel like I've said this the whole podcast. There's two sides to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one is it's becoming overplayed, I think, in some ways. But at the same time, it works.
I know.
Like, it really, really works. So there's this double-edged sword of, like, do you do something that's – you know, trending and maybe starting to flatline a little bit because other people are doing it. I mean, it's working. It's working. So, yeah, that particular blog post, I'll give you a little teaser. Do we know when this is going to be live yet, or is that still?
It'll probably go on Monday.
Monday. Okay. Well, that post might be live by then. So,
okay.
Depending if it is. But so I'll share this with you anyways. It's about do you ever use Fitbit at all?
Oh, yeah. Got mine on right now.
Yeah. Okay. So I have the Fitbit one. And at the end of 2013, so just about a month ago, they sent out an email. It showed your 2013 fitness summary. And you probably have the same – if you subscribe to their emails, you have the same similar email in your inbox. And depending on how many miles you walked in that year, I think I walked 500 and something miles according to Fitbit. To be fair, that was only – I didn't get my Fitbit in the beginning of the year, so it's a portion of the year. But and then they compared you to where you'd be in the animal kingdom. And so I was a unicorn. They showed an example of a unicorn. And it was very creative email. And the whole point of it is that I'm a big believer that I think email should be – and I think all marketing really for that matter should be more on this, you know, quote-unquote human, more like realistic – not that unicorns are realistic, but you know, more human and more. Yeah, I know. Sorry, all your listeners. They're not real.
I'm influential in unicorns on clout. Just saying.
Yes. Well, of course. Aren't we all?
Aren't we all? No, I literally am. I made it one of my 10 topics.
Oh.
Because why not? Because
there you have
it. It's all a game. I'm sorry, but go ahead.
You know, just saying. So you know the blog, the just this idea that I think your communication should be more unique and creative and human. I mean, it sounds very silly to say out loud, but we write emails. Humans write emails for other humans. And yet lots of the communication that you read out there when it comes to email is boring corporate speak.
Yep.
And I'm a big believer that, you know, if you do things that are a little bit more creative and unique, and they don't have to be crazy. They don't have to take a ton of time. But, you know, they make it more shareable. They make it more interesting. They make me want to go back and read emails from Fitbit because I know they're going to be interesting. Ultimately, what Fitbit wants me to do is they don't care that I read the email. They want me to read the email but then share it, share the content of that email. So other people, they can – you know, I can do the marketing for Fitbit, or they want me to go back to the website so I can maybe buy another accessory to go with the Fitbit, or buy – I think they sell, you know, scales now or something too. So – you know, all those things, you know, I just think the more you can be human, it's more fun. And also, like, who wants to read all that boring crap? Like, if you're going to read email, read the stuff that's fun.
Yeah, no, totally. I'll give you another one for your, you know, bank of examples is Eat24. I don't know if they have that out west.
Totally. I just used them on Friday. And actually, it's a good reminder because all of their, you're right. All of their language on their website too.
Yeah.
You know, right after you order, you get a series of emails. I mean, it's great. Yeah, I'm glad you remind. In fact, I'm going to make a note of that somewhere. Okay. I'm going to make a note of E24 because you're exactly right.
Yeah, they do just a really good job with it.
Presentation deck up. I just keep adding to it. So
yeah. So it's funny, though, you mentioned this, and it's good because I wanted to talk to you about this. So this is a really nice segue to it. I looked, you know, in looking up all the stuff that you do all over, something that continually comes up, it's a constant theme of yours, is people, 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 humanity, being human, people. And I absolutely love it. And, you know, it's funny, I do a lot of, you know, both you and I do a lot of speaking and we talk to a lot of different organizations and this and that. And it's funny because they're always looking for, you know, case studies and best practices and examples. And oftentimes I have a hard time, because all I want to do is tell them to look, just be a human being, like connect with people more deeply and more, you know, intimately and more like a human, and you'll be surprised at how well it works. You know, good example is somebody contacted me today to help with being on this panel and was looking for somebody else. And I just reached out to my network and said, hey, does anybody know about someone who has this kind of experience? And within like 2 hours, I had like 15 or 20 replies. Like, how do I quantify that? How do I put an ROI on that for a company? But when I'm talking to a company, they want to know up front, you know, what's the value of doing this? I'm wondering how, in your experience, you've been able to communicate this value of being a person. As strange it is that we have to quantify that or say that there's a value to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I try to describe it to people is, I sort of said this earlier, but it's the idea that we are humans communicating with other humans. And you have to think about, I think sometimes we have to step back and say, yes, we're marketers, but we're humans first. What kind of content do you consume the most? You know, the boring email that is just informational, or something that talks about unicorns. I mean, that's the stuff that people talk about. That's the stuff that gets people interested and gets shared. And so I think sometimes just reminding people that even though we're marketers, we're also people who consume marketing. And, you know, if you look at one of your emails and you say, well, I would never open that, or I'd never click on it, well, then most likely your audience isn't too. Now, granted, that's assuming your audience is similar to who you are. But hopefully you're in a job where, you know, you're doing something that you're passionate about and your audience is equally passionate about it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's a shame though that we have to even have that explanation because it seems so obvious. You know, an example that's not too dissimilar is when we, you know, I talk about search with a client or with a prospect. The first thing I try to get them to do is actually walk themselves mentally how they would go about searching for something, because oftentimes what they're asking for and what they would behave like to find that are two totally different things.
Yep.
So it's a way of showing it to them. And I think your point is, you know, really well taken. If you can help people, remember that they're human for a minute, instead of marketers, it might just be a really good way to get them there.
Yeah. In fact, you've also thank you for helping me prepare my presentation, because you've given me a lot of ideas already of just almost asking the audience, like, what are the emails that are most relevant to you? What are the ones that you open the most, that you get excited about, that you actually don't cringe when a new email comes in? And the ones that have a more human tone, I mean, this is anecdotal, but I'm guessing the ones that have a more human tone are the ones you're more likely to open. I mean, the boring, unless it's like a, you know, receipt order or something like that. But those are the ones you're more likely to open and share.
Mm-hmm. But even the receipt and boring ones, if you open them by chance and you happen to see that they're fun, you
right.
begin to think, maybe I'm going to open the next one. Maybe there's a surprise in there. Maybe there's a
Well, I've got, Easter you know, egg. The classic example I gave, I don't know if you remember, this was years ago. You remember the company CD Baby? Derek
yes.
Sivers?
Yes, I do.
So this is – I'll actually read the first part of this, because this is in my presentation. I don't know if they still do this, but when you order a CD from them, you get this email from Derek Sivers. It says, your CD – I won't read the whole thing, but your CDs have been gently taken from our CD Baby shelves with sterilized contamination-free gloves and placed in a satin pillow. A team of 50 employees inspected your CDs and polished them to make sure they're in the best possible condition before mailing. Our packaging specialist from Japan lit a candle and a hush fell over the crowd as he put your CDs into the finest gold-lined box that money can buy. And it goes on and on and
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it basically says, you know, thank you for buying this CD. And, I mean, that's pretty cool versus the other example I give is right above this. I don't know what this was, where this is from. It says, Dear David, thank you for placing your order. This confirms you've placed an order for the products listed below, with the billing, shipping, and shipping information also listed below. Our records indicate the following for your order. Order ID number. You know, it's like,
yeah.
That compared to the other, it's like night and day, right?
Yeah. I'm so bored by this email. It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell me some of the stuff that you're doing at Marketo. I mean, like I said, I'm a huge fan of Marketo. I'm a huge fan of the marketing automation movement. I just think it's so interesting and so cool as a way of, you know, resegmenting and providing more relevant and valuable content to people based upon basically how they act.
Yep.
But tell me some of the things
that
or how they don't act.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the examples I've been told about how marketing automation works is just, it's just fantastic. But tell me some of the stuff that you're working on.
So I do sort of a combination of a few different things. I do influencer relations and outreach. And so kind of connecting with my network and also being a thought leader in that regard evangelizing, if you will, about email marketing, marketing automation and the like. And also, you know, with influencers, getting people to help us contribute content and how we can, you know, work together in partnership and that sort of thing.
Do you know Mark Fidelman? I don't
know that name.
He was the most recent podcast guest. It was the episode that actually came out today.
Okay.
He was just on, and he has a company called Evolve and another company called Rainforest, which is a sub-company of Evolve, and it's an influencer marketing platform. And he's got this really interesting approach to engaging influencers and the whole thing. I should probably connect you guys.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to him more, because I'm sort of I'm looking to become a little more formalized with that. Although it's hard because there's the human side of it too, right? You can't automate everything.
Yeah,
that's another story for another day. But no, I'd love to connect with him. And so I'm doing the influencer stuff. I'm also, you know, creating content, so writing blog posts, helping with our definitive guides, other content pieces that we're doing. We're always putting out more and more content, so helping along those lines. And then third, I'm you know, around the thought leadership and internal education around B2C. You know, Marketo's only always been a B2B, really heavy B2B focused company. So I'm, I bring a little more of the B2C background and experience with me. So helping spread the word around that. And, you know, sometimes that's doing, I'm doing two webinars this week. I do, you know, a lot of public speaking, as you know, like you do, and other things to sort of get the voice out there around Marketo, B2C, and just general what marketing automation is all about.
Gotcha. So, as far as like the way that your days are generally broken up, is it mainly that you're How much of what you do is about internal education and, you know, activating the people inside the organization? And are you guys using any tools to do that, you know, to become more of a kind of social learning organization where you're kind of sharing best practices and ideas? Is that part of it?
I think what we use internally, we've been integrated with Salesforce for so long. We use their tool Chatter, and put a lot of content on there. We've made a move, hopefully away from email and more into Chatter. But there's some challenges with that. I mean, not everybody checks Chatter all day long, and lots of stuff still gets lost. I mean, email is still the one, if you want it to be guaranteed that somebody's going to see it, you email it. But, you know, you run into those issues with reply alls and all sorts of other craziness around email. As much as I love email, it can be crazy. But I don't know that we're really using, that I'm aware of, any sort of tools to do that internal education. You know, we use Box a heck of a lot. So all of our stuff is stored in Box, so it's, everybody can get it from different devices and stuff. But other than that, we blog, we use blogging software. I think we use something called Silver Stripe as our content management solution or system. And then we use Marketo a lot, of course, too. And we use
really?
our own tool to
go figure.
Well, I mean, it sounds crazy, but we have email companies that use Marketo they do their email marketing and market automation through Marketo, even though they have their own email solution. So
wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. I mean, there have been times where I've gone onto the Marketo site and I'll look at something or download something, and like not even an hour later, I've got an email sitting in my inbox, or I have a phone call that's coming in. Definitely on point. It's sort of like when I was researching social listening software, one of the big things I would do is go on the web and just post, anybody have any good recommendations for social listening software? And basically, if you're a social listening software and you're not looking for that, then
yeah, you should. Dude, that should be a keyword. Yeah,
it should be part
for sure.
Of it. It's funny. Okay, so two things. One, I want to know why you're so in love with email, because I just came to terms with email. We just made up. We used to be really, really big enemies. So I want to know how this came to be that you're so in love with it. What is it about that you love so much? And the second thing, I wanted to talk a little bit about the headlines, just because I wanted to talk a little bit about what my process looks like and see if it's similar to yours. But first, I want to just tell me, why do you love email? Because it's all over all your stuff.
I wish there was some great story behind it. The middle version, I guess, of this long story is that I had been in the business world for a couple years after college. Then I moved to Florida and was in my mid-20s, sort of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Ended up moving back to Rochester, New York, where I grew up, and started teaching eighth grade. And so I ended up getting my master's of education, taught eighth grade for a couple years. And then first year I moved back, I met my now wife in Rochester. She was a first year medical student, and we moved to North Carolina for her to do her residency. When we got to North Carolina, I was done with teaching. I was going to try to get back into the business world, and I was looking for a company to work at that seemed like a fun company, was doing something online, and those are sort of my only criteria: small company doing something online. And I found a company called Bronto, an email marketing company based in Durham, North Carolina. I knew nothing about marketing, really, for the most part. I didn't know anything about email. And they were an email service provider, and still are. You know, that's what they do, is they do email. And so I kind of, in a sense, fell into it. And, that was in 2005. So almost a decade ago, I've been doing something to do with email marketing ever since. Now, I think where I became really sort of fell in love with email is it's the one – it's the original social network in a lot of ways. You know, it's the one tool that, love or hate, everybody still uses.
Yep.
I don't care what age you are. I know this whole, kids aren't using email anymore. Well, that's not true. I mean, they do. They might have a time in their life where they're using Facebook more, social networking sites more. But you get into professional workspace and you're using email. And, we all hear from companies that we like and some that we don't like through email. And it works. And it's nice to be in an industry where, like marketing automation, it just works. You know, if it's done right, it works. Where not to knock on social, I think social can be very powerful, but people are still trying to figure out how to use social media, and it's becoming more commercialized and less. I think it's more about the marketing, less about the social lately. And I think what's nice about email is there's that balance still. You can send personal emails, you can send professional emails, you can send mass emails, you can send targeted emails, you get an email confirm. And there's so many different types of emails and so many ways to do it. interesting ways to send email marketing campaigns. That I've just, yeah, I sort of have a, you know, the joke sometimes in my bio, I eat, sleep, dream, breathe, take short cat naps, and they all are around email.
That's funny. And what I like about it is, you know, a couple things. One, I love that the data is kind of normalized across all different platforms. You're always going to get opens, clicks, forwards, all that stuff. And we're definitely starting to see more social integration and things like that. Yep. But to your point is, you know, I've come into organizations and, you know, I have a social business agency, so everybody expects me to come in and start talking about Twitter. And I come in and oftentimes, you know, given the client base that we work with, highly regulated industries, professional services, I'm like, you know, email's really going to be your best route here. And they're like, email? And I'm like, let's make a deal. Why don't you go into any room of any group of prospects or clients or anybody that you network with and say, hands up if you use Facebook, and then do hands up if you use email. As popular as Facebook is, I'll bet you email still wins.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
You know, so I always use that as the example. Want to talk to you a little bit about headlines, because just want to circle back to that a little bit, because again, I noticed your headlines are awesome. I spend a lot of time on my own headlines. I work a lot with clients on their headlines. And one of the ways that I've really learned to take mine up a notch is that I use the Copy Blogger Magnetic Headlines series. So basically what I do for a content strategy session with a client is that I'll sit down with them, I'll throw a Cosmopolitan at them or a GQ, and I'll have them circle all their favorite headlines. And then we identify what are the formulas that they like best. And inevitably they're list posts, they're how-to posts, they're all the different things. And then I give them a copy of the Copy Blogger Magnetic Headlines. We take their topics and we create the headlines as a result of those. When you're working with clients, and both presently and then in terms of, you know, your past with email marketing, what's the sort of process that you take them through to help them get a better understanding of how to write emails that people are going to open, that are going to be compelling, they're going to be interesting, where the headlines are good, the whole thing? Kind of, can you give us just, you know, the DJ Waldo quick tips?
Yeah, it's funny. I actually take a little of a different approach. I do like that approach. I have a lot of respect for it, but I think that to me, I never, you know, subject lines are very tricky because what works for you doesn't necessarily work for me. So an Upworthy type headline or BuzzFeed type headline, you know, for somebody that's never seen one can be very powerful. Once you've seen it a few times, or a list one doesn't necessarily resonate as well. So my approach always is do an A-B test. You know, forget me telling you what subject line I think is going to work. Test it. Test with your audience. And what works today might not work tomorrow. So, you know, test one that is very outlandish and out there and crazy and GQ type or Upworthy type, and test one that's sort of boring. And sometimes you find the boring one actually performs better than the, you know, the one that's more out there. Now, that being said, I have found, especially in the B2C world, I mean, the emails, the subject lines that have more of a sense of urgency, the one that have, you know, an expiration date or they have a discount or something like that, tend to perform better. But it depends on what you define by performing better. In some industries, perform better means better open rates. Some, you know, you're more interested in click rates. Some is conversion rates. And so the example I give, I talked about in my book and I give all the time is, you know, people have always said, don't use the word free in a subject line or don't use all caps. Well, it works, you know, and it's proven to work. And so especially if you know, it might be lower open rates if you say free shipping, but you're probably going to have the people that are ready to buy are more likely open that email and actually buy something because, I mean, it's sort of like the Living Social emails. You know, their headlines can be quite long sometimes, or Groupon, and yet their open rates might be lower, but you know what? If you open it, you know why you're opening, because everything is laid out in the subject line.
Yeah, it's sort of like the long tail of email subject lines.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on. All right, so I got one more question for you. I like to ask this one to all of my guests because thankfully I've had some really freaking cool people on this show, and I thank you for setting aside the time to chat with me. But I want to ask you what you're most excited about looking forward, whether it be something that you're personally involved with and working with, or whether it's a new technology or a new trend that's coming up. You know, we've you know, come at this from a bunch of different perspectives, but I'm curious, like, what's on your mind and has got you really excited right now?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is ties into what we're doing here at Marketo too, but I really, you know, one of the reasons I joined Marketo is I kind of talk about this personal and professional graduation from email to marketing automation. I mean, email is a component of marketing automation. And so what we're trying to do in 2014 at Marketo is to really infiltrate the B2C space. And we've, as I mentioned before, we've really been a B2B player for a while now, and the goal is to get to really show people that marketing automation is not just in the business-to-business space. It can be used in any industry. And I think there's a huge opportunity in B2C. And, you know, what we've seen for the most part with B2C is most B2C companies are using some sort of email provider. And they might be doing segmented emails. They might be doing campaigns. But they're not really doing any sort of automation other than some basic triggers. They're not doing things like based on what somebody's doing on your website, they get a different email, go into a different flow. And we talk about lead scoring a lot in B2B. But there's a version of lead scoring in B2C that can also happen. And not every email subscriber is the same. And that's what marketing automation solutions like Marketo, of course, help with, is they start to identify what people are interested in, and then you set it up so you send them the content that they're only the content that they're interested in, and based on what they do, whether what they click on, what they open, what actions they take on your website after clicking through an email, you can then start to lead them down a path to either buy more, buy something different, share with their friends, whatever the case is. And so to me, what's really exciting, I guess to summarize, is this idea that marketing automation is not just for B2B. It can be a huge asset for B2C companies as well.
Rocking. Hey, man, I'm looking forward to seeing more marketing automation, because what's cool about marketing automation in my eyes is that it's the first use of the word automation that doesn't feel super icky to me, because in general, automation is very like dehumanizing. It's very cold, and it's very untargeted in most of the instances I've seen it. And what I've seen from marketing automation is that it actually helps you to send smarter emails to people and more relevant content to people. And then that kind of frees you up to be more human in the real, you know, interactions
for
between
sure.
people.
Now, just to be clear about something, you still have to create that content. You don't turn a marketing automation solution on and just works. You still have to, a human still has to create that human content to then send out to the masses. But you can definitely make it more relevant, more targeted with marketing automation platforms.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys are up to, and I'm always on the site checking out the new content you put out there. I'll definitely follow your blog. After this, we'll chat real quick, and you tell me what you want me to put in the show notes. I'll make sure I direct people to all the cool stuff that you're working on. But before we go, DJ, tell people where they can go and be social with you.
DJWALDOW. Search it, love it, own it, everything, and then some. You can find out about me. That's it. That's easy.
Cool, man. I'll put a link to your Twitter and then maybe to a Google search for DJ.
Yeah, there you go.
And that'll make it nice and easy for people. Well, thank you again so much for being on the show. You are, as John describes, an awesome guy. I think we got a lot in common, and I'm really glad you were able to come on the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Cool, man. Take care. Have a good rest of the day.
Okay.
Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show. And we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.